Dmitry Birikov. Hello. Translated by Arch Tate. Voiced by Elena Kravidi. Have you ever traveled in an overcrowded bus, rammed up against the window with your cheek squashed against the glass and the handrail bruising your ribs? No need to answer. Of course you have. No, really, I'm not being rude. Why am I asking? Because I need somewhere to start, and that was the setting of the incident which set off the thoughts which underlie this narrative. Alright? So, I got in a bus. Well, no, I didn't just get on. I forced my way in like a digger biting into sand. Then, amoeba-like, I assumed the shape of a gap between the jostling bodies of my fellow passengers. Good morning, comrades. And slithered my way to the window. My face was squashed against the glass, the handrail was bruising my ribs. Okay. The bus pulled out and my fellow citizens were winnowed into place. Just as well that, when push came to shove, we all proved soft-bodied. Our narrative has begun. Hello. Fortune favors some over others. The start of a good day is when you get a seat on a public transport. Your hand is free to follow its trajectory to your pocket. Withdraw your mobile phone and proceed with it thence, as the requisite buttons are pressed to your ear. Yes, it's me. Hi. A moment's silence. On my way to work. Another short pause. Why not? Okay. Fine, no problem. Why? When? Yeah, sure. No, it's cool. I'll call you when I get there. So long. Mwah. Me too. The hand follows the reverse route from her ear, pressing the end call key as it does so to her pocket. Eyelids close with a face in her hand. The fortunate young lady in possession of a seat now has every right to doze until she reaches her office and has all the necessary conditions for doing so. What dreams are you dreaming, Cruiser Aurora, detonator of the great October Socialist Revolution? No, wrong frame of reference. The dreams of the poet's fair lady are a better metaphor. What was the voice on the telephone proposing? What did you agree to? Will you follow him wherever he goes? Are you in love? May blessings light upon you. I hope you both find happiness. But let us step back a few moments. The conversation is still in progress. The emoticon has not yet closed its eyes, and the young lady, enthroned on her very own seat in the bus, is cooing unabashed with her beloved, heedless of the passengers crowded around her. Of what interest to her are they, and their problems and hopes, their toes trodden on by the people next to them, their arms numb from immobility and stretched by heavy bags. Her soft-bodied fellow citizens, however, have turned and are looking at her with curiosity. How interesting to know what the two of them have just agreed to. Even more intriguing, so intriguing indeed, that they have quite forgotten their trampled toes and numb arms, which by now might as well belong to someone else. Is that casually dropped phrase was just slipped from her tongue? Me too. You too what? And he too what? Just what are you reciprocating? Did he say he loves you? Or something quite different, like, I'd forgotten you completely, for instance? In which case you replied that you'd completely forgotten him too? No? Perhaps he did say he loves you, but is he telling the truth? Love. Do you really know what love is? Have you the faintest inkling? Well, all of us standing here do. Don't underestimate the reason for our looking so exhausted. It's not because we haven't had enough sleep and are all pressed against each other so early in the morning. We have been worn out by love, the immensity of which has filled us to overflowing, which is why we take up so much space. If we didn't know love, we would have withered, and there would be plenty of room for everyone in the bus, which is actually quite spacious. Hey, just a minute. Why all this finger-pointing? Are you trying to pretend you're so amazingly well brought up you don't poke your nose into other people's business, unlike certain other passengers who are demonstrably less well brought up? I'm addressing this to myself. What else can you do if you're being crucified on a handrail other than talk to yourself? Admit it, Paul. You're hoovering up every word, constructing hypotheses, trying to reconstitute such fragments of this enthralling dialogue as were inaccessible to your ear. Just turn away right now and close your eyes. Ah, but first I need to detach my cheek from this window and find what's happened to my arms among all these bodies pressing against each other. Right then, love. If you only knew, dear young lady, the things I have experienced in my life. To give just one example, But actually, what is there to tell? It's just that the minute I see her, every cell in my body is filled with something ethereal. I feel as if I'm walking on air. I glance at her again and... No, sorry. I'll have to tell you the rest another time. It's my stop and I need to get off the bus. I assume liquid form and flowing like a mountain stream over rapids percolate through my fellow citizens. All the best, comrades. Ah, love. It really is very interesting to observe people on the phone. They may be talking about anything, money, politics, art, fitness, and you stand there, next to them, or nearly next to them, catching only half the conversation. You want desperately to know what the unseen interlocutor is saying to the stranger in front of you. Hi, the remote person has also said hi. I'm good. Probably a response to how are you doing. And you? Yes, how is he doing, you would like to know. That's great. He is also good. The stranger says nothing for a time while his friend is evidently communicating detailed and important information. The individual you have under observation knits his eyebrows, most probably indicating that the remote speaker is passing on facts of great significance, which he needs to remember. He closes his eyes in order not to have his attention distracted by what is going on around him. He nods, his expression tense. It looks as if these two men have come up with a project which has been trashed by consultants. They will have to go back to the drawing board and can forget about trips to the countryside next weekend. Every spare moment will need to be spent going over diagrams, tables and plans if the problems are to be ironed out by next Monday. The stranger's shoulders droop, his face muscles slacken. He's so tired of the niggling of his superiors, but he's also used to it. Now, what do they want? I've had it up to here with a lot of them, his body language seems to say. Now, however, he has pulled himself together, straightened his back, frowned, and opened his eyes. This is not what he was expecting. It is completely out of order. They've got some gall, how dare they? He relaxes again and closes his eyes. What's the point of talking to them? It's useless trying to get through to them. But we're entirely within our rights, he exclaims abruptly. All is not lost, it seems. There is a toehold. We fight on. Your rights to what? I blurt out and immediately clam up. I was so engrossed into my listening, or rather eavesdropping, that I have blown it. What did you say? You said you were within your rights and I... Idiot, stop talking. This has nothing to do with you. Pretend to be looking the other way and he'll think... He must have imagined your ridiculous question. What business of yours is it? Who are you anyway? Forgive me. I turn on my heel and walk away. I need to hold myself in check and be more careful next time, if indeed there is a next time. It's just that playing at spies is such fun. Of course I would need to decide which state to work for, and none of these regimes really merit having me spend my time and efforts on them. I would be a mere pawn. When what I want very much is to be a king. The truth of the matter is that I don't give a fig for any of these superpowers of theirs. I wouldn't get out of bed for them. If I was going to be a secret agent, it would be in the service of some small, peace-loving banana republic with no ambitions to remake the world in its own image, which just wanted to live and let live. Only then it wouldn't need a secret agent. Nothing ever works out. Well, fine. I will just gather intelligence for my own amusement. I like the look of that girl over there in the coat. She shall be observed. Her phone rings. We'll skip the hi, how are you doing preamble. I thought it was great there too. Right, they've been somewhere together. The question is where? Sir Rice. Ah, they are talking clothes. What else would you expect? We shall proceed on the assumption that this girl has been to a shop or dressmaker and now has a cerise colored dress, which will make her look gorgeous when she shows it off to her friends. Miss Tuck here too? Well, young lady, two dresses. Isn't that a bit wild? Spare a thought for your parents' bank balance? You're still very young, and I greatly doubt you can be earning enough to buy two pretty dresses at the same time. Oh dear, oh dear. I quite like the chocolate too. What, three dresses? Our researchers have revealed all we need to know about her. The only thing in her mind is going out to be admired in her latest outfits. I didn't like the strawberry, though. too sickly and the flavor was kind of synthetic. Time to backpedal. A dress might just about be sickly and can certainly be synthetic, but it can't taste synthetic. So what are we talking about here? You deceived me, young lady. I thought we were talking dresses. I had you down for a frivolous young thing, but now it seems you're a sweet, modest girl who is into ice cream. Whatever next? You can't believe what people say. You think you've got them sussed, but then they turn out completely different. Yes, hi, sweetheart. All right, I'm not going even to try interpreting this. Just silently enjoy witnessing someone else's happiness. Here's an interesting thought. Why do we talk about condoling with other people's grief, but say you can never share other people's happiness? Why can we commiserate, but never be co-exultant, co-joyful, co-jubilant, never co-walk on air, or co-exist in seventh heaven? When we condole with someone, are we really maliciously enjoying that other person's misfortune, or at least feeling relieved it didn't happen to us? Whereas when another person is happy, that didn't happen to us too. So what is there to be glad about? Well, I'm not like that. If somebody else is happy, I'm happy. Don't you know you drive me crazy? You're fantastic, wonderful, fabulous. I love you to pieces. You have no idea how much I love you. How lovely, she answers him in the same vein. I so much want this couple to be happy. Okay, fine, call me. You know my number. Is that it? He circles and soars in the Empyrean, gives expression to such beautiful words, and then settles for a phone number? From astral heights he plummets headlong back to the digital mire on Earth. Or has he, Icarus-like, flown too high, until the solar power of love melted the wax holding his wings together? My number, my number, my number, my number. I can't get the words out of my head. I have a number too, like the inmate of a concentration camp. How marvelous it all was in old days. Good day to you, miss. Would you be so kind as to put me through Mr. Apfel the grocer? You could rest assured that the person you would talk to next would be none other than Mr. Apfel himself. The receptionist at the telephone exchange would never confuse him with anybody else, since Mr. Apfel the grocer was a person of repute and well known. Today, we have all been reduced to digits. How odd that, although in theory a digit is a more precise signifier than a first name, ever since we all had serial numbers hung round our necks, we have started getting them wrong. Hello, is that the house manager? A voice yells down the telephone, invisible and hence beyond reach of my anger, despite the fact that he has wakened me at 5 a.m. No, this is community boat hire, I mutter sleepily, and hold down the receiver. A few seconds later, the phone rings again. Hello, is that the house manager? My remote adversary persists. I told you this is the Gobi Dessert Steamship Company. How fortunate Grocer Apfel was all those years ago, before anyone could digitize him. His face twitches nervously. Something is clearly bugging him. From time to time, he produces his mobile from an inside pocket, presses the numbers with his thumb, and applies the receiver to his ear. His lips move soundlessly as he utters some private curse and returns the receiver to his jacket pocket. A couple of minutes later, the ritual is repeated. His movements exactly replicate what he did shortly before, so that you seem to be watching the scene not in reality, but constantly replayed on video. Oh, hell's bells and buckets of blood, he finally says aloud. On such occasions, I myself swear. It doesn't take me long to deduce that a plastic voice in his phone is indubitably telling him, I'm sorry, the person you have called is not available. He has a problem. I have now come to the end of my working day. The journey back home from the office is in itself agreeable, but has an inexplicable bonus in that now the bus is almost empty. I have no idea what happens to all my fellow citizens who crowd the bus in the morning. Can it really be that most of them remain at their workplace? Because then, where would they all come from again the next morning? The world is a puzzle. A middle-aged gentleman wearily climbs on board at one of the stops and makes a beeline for an empty seat. He sprawls self-indulgently on it and is about to doze off. something he can only dream of in the morning when the seat would be occupied, and like many of his comrades in misfortune, he is standing on somebody else's toes, compressed on all sides by his half-asleep fellow passengers, when a ringtone disturbs his hard-earned dreaming. Yes, we were stuck at work. Somebody is demanding a detailed report from the subject of our surveillance, and demanding it very insistently, to judge by the working of his facial muscles. At the other end of the line, which in our days takes the form of an electromagnetic microwave, there is most likely the spouse of the very passenger, to whom he will now recount, blow by blow, all he has done in the course of the day, and then, on returning home, have to repeat it word for word if she is not to be upset. I'll try. In Russian, the expression I'll try is effectively a polite form of refusal. It would be inappropriate for him to say directly, I can't, I don't want to, and I won't. Instead, he replies diplomatically to a request or demand, to which I'm not privy, by saying, I'll try. Yes, 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 yes! How completely fed up he must be with this endless quizzing. The same question again and again. How many times does he have to say it? His answering yes 5 times in succession may reflect the number of times the person on the other end of the phone has put the same question. At each additional repetition, the middle-aged gentleman will now add a further yes. Fine, I'll phone you about it later. He has not been speaking to his wife. He is not on his way to meet the person he was talking to. They're just going to talk on the phone later. My surmise unravels again. I will never make a spy. It is not to be. Tomorrow morning I shall try to find a new pastime. Excuse me, someone is calling. Hello? P.S. Warning. Unsanctioned telephone tapping, like all other intrusion into private life, is a criminal offense. P.P.S. This text was not commissioned by mobile phone network providers, and all resemblance to your own telephone conversations is coincidental. P.P.P.S. Never use the loudspeaker function on your mobile phone. Let at least something in this world remain hidden and personal.